Welcome back, listeners and readers. This is Jason from Reading While Black. It's a pleasure to have you guys listening to this podcast. Once again, we're back with our special week of different day, different conversations. But before I get into who is the special guest today, I want you guys, one, to just remember to, you know, leave 5 stars and leave a review if you can. If you do not leave 5 stars, I'm inclined to think you are a hater. But in all seriousness, I want you guys to, of course, engage with the podcast as much as possible. This is your podcast as much as it is mine. So we use features like voice messages where you guys can speak and converse directly with me and as well as the author that we are interviewing. Remember that we are reading Casey Gerald's There Will Be No Miracles Here as our December book of the month. Remember to pick that up and remember to support your local bookstore. We also have a couple of different promo codes going on right now for the Reading While Black merch. If you use the promo code RWBXMAS, that's RWBXMAS, you'll get 35% off in the online store. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ReadingWhileBLK, and remember to always check out the website ReadingWhileBlackBookClub.com. Now today we have a special guest, as I was referring to earlier, and he is one that hails from the state of Michigan, Inkster to be exact. His name is Juel Jones. He is the state of Michigan's youngest State House representative representing the 11th district. At one point in time, Juel was a city councilman at the age of 20 years old. So he's been doing this for quite some time to be this young. It's really amazing to watch a guy activate himself, a young man activate himself so early in the political spectrum and the arena that is politics. It's very difficult, obviously, in these spaces sometimes to get your name out there and to get yourself out there, and to see somebody so young activate themselves in a space where you don't really see a lot of young faces and where we should see more young faces, especially in the State House. It was breathtaking to sit down with Juel and have a short conversation just about what he's doing in the state of Michigan. He's always moving around. If you follow him on Instagram, he is on the move 24/7. But he always checks in if you shout him out, if you shoot him a text message. He's a really, really great guy. Like I said, I had a great conversation with him, and I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation that I had. So let's get into it. First thing we're going to do is pay some bills, as we always do, because we got to pay bills, got to keep the lights on. And most importantly, after that, you will hear my conversation with Juel. After that, there'll be some church announcements about the next book that we're reading, of course, for the month of December. And then stay tuned for the next different day conversation, you know, different day, different conversations podcast that'll be releasing tomorrow. So let's get started. All right, welcome back to Reading While Black podcast. This is Jason once again. I'm here with a really, really special guest, a powerful brother, maybe the youngest State House representative in U.S. history, possibly.
At one time,
because they're still coming, which is great. Coming, so yeah. You set the precedent. But this brother is powerful. We in his city. Specifically, and I thought it was only right to bring him on to speak with him. He's going to speak truth to power. So just introduce yourself. I want it to be a surprise because I think I gave a hint, but I don't think people really know. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, hey, brother, appreciate being on the show. This is Juel Jones, currently a state representative for the 11th House District. So I represent Garden City, Dearborn Heights, Livonia, Westland, and Livonia, some suburbs outside on the west and southern tips of Detroit. But we're out here in Detroit. I'm excited. The convention is going great. It's thousands of people here. So
yeah, 10,000 people in one city, man. It's like excellent. Added on to already a big city. Right. So I just want to get into it, man. Like, just tell me what your experience has been so far at convention. Mm-hmm. The people you've seen. I know you're not a rookie to this. This is, you know, we talked briefly. You know, you said you've been to a couple more. Prior to this is my my second convention.
Okay.
But, you know, being a state house representative, you know, being a representative of people, mm-hmm. I believe you didn't say that you didn't call yourself a politician the first time I met you. I think you called, what did you refer to?
Public servant.
Public servant. Right. I do like that because mm-hmm. you do serve the people.
Yeah.
So just talk about your time, you know, in the state house, the work that you've done, you know, how that relates to NAACP. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what you're looking to get out of the convention as well, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been in the State House for about 3 years now. It's been a roller coaster, to say the least. But I think why I'm so excited about things like the convention that's taking place right now is you got young people from all over the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure even people from outside of the country here. In one place, creating space and opportunity for ourselves and for the, you know, the future generations of change. And so that's kind of what I'm really looking to take out of this convention is really just this relationship building, you know, building community with my brothers and sisters out here that I know are going to be on the front lines, especially when I sit around and a lot of times I'm talking as an older person in the room, but, you know, I'm about the same age as a lot of folk that are a part of, like, the Youth and College Division, for example. And so to see people who are young pioneers in their own respect, in their own communities, coming here and being so excited and being so passionate and being so servient to just to the cause, to the organization, I think that's something that's very commendable. I look forward to seeing more of that happen in our community.
So I believe that you're a serviceman as well. I'm a former serviceman. I'm retired. Army Reserve, 7 years.
Okay.
Down at 375th CSSB.
Okay.
Deployed once in Afghanistan. So, you know, we talk a lot in the Army, you know, and throughout all branches about selfless service. And you are probably the greatest example of selfless service, being a servant of the people. Mm-hmm. People off, like, I work a local political race right now. Down in Montgomery, hoping to put the first black man in the mayoral seat in 202-year history in the Capitol.
Yeah,
it's a tall task, but somebody's got to do it, right? But I think one of the coolest things that I've seen in this is seeing, like, he understands the purpose of representation.
Right.
And I think you understand that as well, but he also understands the purpose of serving. Selfless service is, you know, one of the biggest parts of being a serviceman, and I think I just want you to talk about really, like, how you went into your political race. You know, I often say, like, people don't make, Andrew Gillum said, politicians don't make people brave, people make politicians brave. So I just wanted you to talk about your campaign trail, you know, leading up to serving, and just how people have, you know, inspired, like, you inspire people, but I believe that people inspired you to run. Just talk about those inspirations.
I think even when I first got started on city council back in 2015, it was because people told me to do it. And it's because I was out there volunteering and, you know, doing community service. I was in high school, transitioning to college, working with different organizations, you know, starting businesses. I was like a little entrepreneur, you know, doing a little bit of everything.
You got
to
hustle.
So I got my face out there. You got to, you know, hustling hard to set you apart. But I think, just, you know, in terms of the campaign, like, we just took that inspiration and kept moving forward. So it's like, you know, everyone has something special inside them. Everyone has these skills and talents, these beliefs and these values. And so the more that you can pull from people, the stronger the campaign becomes. And so I know I mentioned it before. I mean, we're doing different things, like we're having community barbecues and on the block, letting people who were from the neighborhood really host it. And so we're really just supporting people to start different things that they could do themselves. For the most part, and we would show up and we would help out. You know, we would get people to get on bikes when we passing out literature, and we just ride bikes through the neighborhood and just hit people that are sitting outside. You know, we're doing different things in a way that might have been not conventional to a campaign. But as a young person, you know, we're able to do some new things, some things that people haven't seen before, and show other people that are running what you could do. And so that's when you find out, when you start really building your campaign off what the people want and what the people value, a lot of others going to come and ask you, how did you do it? They're going to ask you, how can they take that formula and make it something that's, you know, conducive towards their overall growth? So that's really the key, is the people.
Yeah, I was at, and that was going to lead me up to my next question. You know, you have a lot of young people here probably asking you a lot of questions around about running. We were just talking about this, but I tell a lot of my mentees down at Alabama State, I'm like, don't worry about running for you know, yeah, you can run for SGA. Yeah, yeah, you can run for Miss ASU. You can run for all that stuff. Mm. But you can run for city council.
Is it true?
What better representative of a district than, mm-hmm. you know, you got 4,000 students on a campus. You can pick your city council. And I'm pretty sure they pick somebody who understands their plight better, true. You know, than any, they can understand your plight, especially being on mm-hmm. a college campus. So, yeah. You know, for the high schoolers that are going to be listening to this, I know because Youth in Colleges has told me that they will be, you know, pubbing this. We got a couple of different episodes now. I thought this was going to be one episode, but we didn't interview so many people yeah. at this point. We're going to have a political action section, a LGBTQ section, a youth in college section, just focusing on youth in college and the things that students are doing, a law fellow section as well, you know, focusing on, we got a chance to interview all the law fellows over mm-hmm. down in the hallway, but just give people an idea of, like, the steps that they need to start taking. How early do they really start need to mm-hmm. plan in their campaign? What goes into it? Right. An early start of, like, what's a good foundation and just things that you mm-hmm. did to get you where you are.
Yeah, I think in terms of the campaign, like, it's different for everybody, right? But it's the few things to get started are pretty common across the board. You know, you have to do a filing fee mm-hmm. where you pay a certain amount of money, get your name on the ballot, or you can go out and get signatures. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's something you need to be paying attention to. That you don't have to get out, meet people on the doorsteps, out in the neighborhood, and if they live in your district, you know, you have to get those signatures from them. You need to file information and paperwork with the IRS. You got to mm-hmm. set up bank accounts. Mm-hmm. You know, get you a EIN number. It's a lot of infrastructural things that we have to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, especially for people of color, that we sometimes fall into different mm-hmm. loopholes mm-hmm. when we get into that. So that's really the key, is before you even think about running for office, or even you think about starting a business, make sure you got your affairs in order when you're talking about paperwork, because you don't ever want to get to a point where you're about to win a campaign and your business is booming and you are getting letters from the IRS talking about they about to come and see something, or, you know, ooh. Or your filing fee check bounce. You mm-hmm. know, it's little things like that where when you really get emotional in the campaign, it's easier for young people. You know, everyone's looking for that next fresh face. And so when you come out the shoe talking about, you know, I got new ideas and a new voice and, you know, I'm ready to lead the way, people are going to support you, right? Because mm-hmm. it's a movement going on right now. And it's been going on, quite frankly, for a few years. So it's really just about you getting out there. You just got to stand up, speak out.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I've kind of been, as I told you about, you know, Reading While Black was mm-hmm. formed out of, you know, a reaction to, you know, the 2016 presidential election. And the one thing that I've learned is that, you know, 45 has mm-hmm. given us, the one thing that he has done is he's made a lot of people step up and put on their superhero capes. The one thing about a supervillain being in the White House is that some superheroes got to stand up. And I feel like you're a superhero yourself. You had to, you made a stance to, you know, locally. And I think that's one of the things that I really do respect about you supremely, because I think people don't grasp how powerful local politics is, how powerful, you know, having a state representative mm-hmm. that advocates for you. I live in a state capital currently, and I tell people the beauty, there's privilege in living in a state capital, and you can understand this as well, because when you live in a state capital, you see everything that happens at that state house mm-hmm. before anybody else. It's on your local news that night if mm-hmm. they pass any bill. If I live 2 hours, 3 hours away, it might hit my news if it's a big bill, mm-hmm. but if it's just a regular house bill that goes through the Senate and it gets signed by the governor, I may not know a thing. But if I live in the capital, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you know this as a state house representative, like, these people come back to you and they're like, they're telling you their problems, their issues, and like mm-hmm. you're creating policy around that to make sure that you're representing everyone. That mm-hmm. means, like, that goes into the census, making sure that, you know, your district doesn't shrink. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, we have such a gerrymandering issue. And we can, and I know we said we talk a little politics. I'm not very well versed on Michigan politics in general. I do remember what Betsy DeVos did here. We were watching, you know, from afar down in Alabama, and I think seeing you rise out of that, because you're thinking like, man, Michigan ain't making no sense, and then you see this young brother on Instagram, and like, that's how I first saw you. I was mm-hmm. like, wait a minute. And then, you know, we just talked about Jeremy, like, shout out to Jeremy Anderson, because one, I'm from Mississippi, so I'm a little biased. But you know, I met him when he was still a young state house representative. Okay. And I was like, whoa. Yeah. And I was like, well, I said, what am I doing with my life? But, you know, we can get into it just, you know, with politics here, just to kind of give people a political idea what the political climate has been here over the last couple of years since you've been in the state house for 3 years.
So, I mean, in Michigan, it's been, I guess, kind of the same. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, probably about 8, 10, 12 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, this was a blue state. So we had, you know, political power on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. Now you see it's been a shift. So the Republicans are running the state, so now the state is red. But now Democrats are starting to get a little bit more involved. And I think because 2016 was a wake-up call for a lot mm-hmm. of people.
Right.
And sometimes we need that extra push. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, in terms of you know, politics here in the state of Michigan, a lot happens, right?
Yeah, a lot happens pretty quickly.
You might be looking at reforming auto insurance mm-hmm. or, you know, doing something in regards to Flint. You might also be looking at people trying to save the wolves in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And so the spectrum
is wide.
It's crazy in
Michigan. And I think people don't really understand, like, how much, and this is what I'm getting at, like, how much your local government, like, decides. This is why I tell people, y'all care a lot about that presidential seat, but your mayor, your city councilman, your county commissioner, like, they sign a bill, and that automatically affects your life. And that's, I think, before I was working working a campaign, mm-hmm. I was doing restorative justice around voting rights. And one of the biggest things that I always tell people is, like, man, if you're not paying attention, you're not gonna get your piece of the pie. Like, right. A lot of people, like, when you go to, I view politics as an arcade, really. Like, you go into an arcade and you have mm-hmm. tokens. Those tokens mean that you can possibly win tickets, right. And those tickets mean that you can get prizes. Right. But yeah. You don't come in with them tokens. You're gonna be watching a whole bunch of people play the game,
right.
And you're gonna be just sitting there on the sideline. You may not have as many tokens as everybody, so mm-hmm. that means that you maybe need to form a collective group with people. Because if you got two tokens and I got two tokens and we got four tokens, so that increases our chances mm-hmm. to get more tickets. And this is what advocacy work does. Yeah. And this is what political strategy does. Like, I went from nonpartisan work to partisan work,
true.
And now I'm seeing the difference. It's not much different. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? But I think the beauty of it is that when you, and you know this, when you meet a person who has a mission, that has a vision, and I know for you, when you were running, you weren't thinking about the first term. You're thinking about the next six terms, or you're thinking about, you know, what impact, like, can the policy that I create, how long does that affect someone? You know what I'm saying? How can that possibly affect someone? What are the pros and the cons of this?
True.
And also negotiating. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the hardest things that us as black folk, we don't understand sometimes, that sometimes you got to negotiate with the person uh-huh. that you may disagree with. Yeah. As I like to say, with black folk, there ain't a lot of nuance. It's either black or it's white. We don't live in gray. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's because we don't get the opportunity to operate in that gray area. So I know for you, you know, I know you got to sit across that that table with people that you may not ever think you'd have to sit across a table with, and you got to make deals. Mm-hmm. So just talk about that real quickly for me.
I think it's important in order to negotiate. I mean, you got to realize that this game is all about compromise. And so sometimes when we're putting everything on the table, you might not get the perfect bill. You might not get your idea laid out just how you wanted it. But in order to get things done, there has to be some degree of you know, communication and amongst two parties. And so whenever you're dealing with that, especially when you got party politics and you got divisions and you got people's personal interests, it's important for you to know how to negotiate, because, you know, that extends far beyond politics. If you can negotiate, you basically can survive out here,
right?
And de-escalate a lot of different situations. You know, but if you don't know how to talk and not effectively communicate with people,
ooh.
You in trouble.
Yeah, you in a whole lot of trouble. Yeah, like, being in the military, I think that's one of the best ways I learned how to communicate with people.
Yeah.
It was like, because you meet people from all over the world.
Everywhere.
Like, not even just across the country, like, really all over the world, in the aspect of, like, I met people from Guam. I met a guy, like, because, you know, the funniest thing about being in the military is they tell you can really practice any religion that you want, and I thought they were joking. And then I met a dude who said he was a Jedi. And I was like, that's on your dog tag? Are you just playing with me? And it was really on his dog tag. I was like, oh. But, and this is just like, when you understand this, when I don't care if you black, white, when we across that water, My job is to bring you home.
Exactly.
I remember I told a dude, I said, man, sometimes the only, my boy was, a soldier was asking me, you know, I really don't like my, you know, I don't like my sergeant. Because I feel like sometimes he can be racist or he can be a bigot about certain things. And I was like, you know, that's obviously a serious issue that you need to talk to a superior about. And I said, but also I'll tell you this. I said, sometimes the only thing in old head, but you know, them old head black sergeants put you on game. always put you on game. And one sergeant told me sometimes the only thing that you can respect about somebody is the uniform that they wear. Doesn't mean that you have to like them as a person. Right. Doesn't mean that you... But because of the uniform that you wear, you have an obligation to make sure that that person returns to their family. And that's even if they don't value your humanity or value somebody else's humanity that you're advocating for. And and this is the same thing in politics. You know, the one thing that I've always told people is, like, I wish that money wasn't so involved in politics and people were more involved in politics. Because when the people are involved, you know what I'm saying, it's when, because when you're advocating for people, there's no reason, like, to have a beef, because you're like, yo, we have to make this great for every, like, we were selected by thousands of people to work for them. And they looking at us every time we go into that state house, you know what I'm saying, to make sure that we're always advocating for them. So when you put that, I know when you put that suit on in the morning, like, sometimes that suit that they wearing across from you is the only thing you can respect about them. But at the same time, you, like, a deal has to be made. So I tell my students that a lot. It's like, you're gonna have disagreements with people. I have had disagreements with people, especially being an NAACP. Like, you have, they have, there's chinks in everybody's armor. There's contradictions to call out, but it's how you work those, you know, how you have those conversations. And and being a communications major, being a strategic communications major, to be exact, you know, the first thing I learned in StratCom was how to talk to people, like interpersonal communication, because if you don't know how to talk to people, it's a wrap. And it's even different now, and you know this with social media, like, especially being a representative, you have to really watch what you say, you know, and how you say it, because anything can be perceived a certain way. And walk, how you walk in a room full of vultures, right? but just one last, or two last questions. What do you want to... I'm not going to talk about, you know, political aspirations. I don't want you to announce that you're running for governor or mayor of Detroit. Just playing. I put it. I don't know what you want to do next, man. But I put it out in the universe. Whatever that you want to do, I think you're on the right track. But most importantly, what do you want to get most, you know, out of being a state house representative? For the people, where do you see yourself next? And then also, what books are you reading? Because I know being a man of the people, you got to be reading good books. The only way people become good leaders is if they read about good leaders, right?
I didn't even think, just to talk about that one, first and foremost, it's actually been a process to read, because, you know, I'm running around and I try to make time
for. You gotta get them audio books, man.
Yeah, that's what I got on. You know, so I'm taking these drives back and forth to the Capitol. It's, you know, it's easy to play a book, and you know, by the time I get there, time I wrap up, I basically done heard the whole book. But it's a lot of the simple things that I'm rereading right now. You know, books like The Art of War, Start with Why, How to Get People to Do Things, and these are all, like, you know, books where I just constantly go back in, and I learn something new whenever I end up rereading it. But, I mean, also in terms of just the state house thing, what I plan on getting out of that is just being able to leverage the platform.
Right.
You know, we're in a place right now where we have the opportunity of a lifetime, quite frankly. You know, we've done something that no one else has done. So it's incumbent on us, really, to make sure we're creating space for everybody else. And so anything that I can presently do right now, why I have the title of state rep and why I hold an office at the Capitol, when I have direct access to certain people and certain resources, we doing whatever we can possibly do to help support people back in the community, empower them, get them directly connected to things. So even in the event that I walk away from the house, that they still have connections and they're still able to build the community and able to just keep things going.
Well, tell people where they can find you at, Mr. Representative.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, I'm on Snapchat sometimes, Facebook, just by my name, Jewel Jones.
All right. And anything else you want to tell the listeners?
Anything to tell y'all, just make y'all move before y'all ready. You know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work out here to do. And I think the quote says, you don't have to be great to get started, but you got to get started to be great. So just jump out there, make it happen, and get to work. You know, we excited for y'all.
Well, Representative Jones, it's been a pleasure. It's an honor. I've never interviewed a politician before, so this is a first. A lot of authors, but never a politician. So first time.
First time for everything.
First time for everything, right. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak. I believe this was just a truly great conversation. And guys, we'll get right back to it. We're still doing more interviews at the State House. I mean, not the State House, at the convention. Right. I'm sorry. At the convention today, we got a lot more stuff coming up. We're going to try to get some of those staffers from those from that discussion, because he saw it, I saw it. Like, it's a whole panel of black women that are literally working on presidential campaigns, and that's just, I can't tell you how transformative that is. Like, I got goosebumps in the room, so I'm gonna see if we can get some of those people up here. Hopefully we can get a sit down with them and just, you know, so they can talk about their experiences and everything, you know, at this convention. But thank you so much, Representative Jones, for coming on, and we'll be back with more Reading While Black. Once again, that concludes our interview with Michigan State House Representative Juel Jones. It was a pleasure to really have him come sit down for a few minutes and just converse with us about what he's doing in the state of Michigan. He is a big advocate for the expungement of records for people with felony convictions. And as a person who is a big advocate of, you know, helping with people with felony convictions, you know, doing the work of doing voter restoration for people with felony convictions, really, you know, galvanized me to even care more about the political realm and people who have access to it. So having someone on the show that is, you know, in my age range, that cares about these issues, not just as much as I do, but activated himself in the political arena as a representative in his state house for such a thing, is really beautiful to see. You can always check out what Juel is doing. Juel is heavy on Instagram. You can follow him at Juel Jones MI. That's Juel Jones MI. Make sure that you check him out. Remember to pick up Casey Gerald's There Will Be No Miracles Here. Also, remember to check out his two TED Talks online on YouTube. They are absolutely amazing. I really want you guys to get a chance to know who Casey is before we really start reading his book in the month of December. I hope that you picked up the book. I have already started reading and I love it so far. If you get a chance, get the audiobook as well. Casey is a country Texas boy through and through, and his accent just rings true when you're really listening to him read his memoir. It's truly beautiful. So look out for tomorrow's conversation. We're going to have some attorneys from the NAACP, some law fellows, and on the show to talk about their experience interning at the NAACP. One of them is actually from the city of Montgomery, and she's also an Alabama State University grad. So shout out to the home team. It's homecoming week now, so really, really excited to release that episode. I'm always going to rep the home team before anything else. But you guys have a great day. Have a wonderful week, and we can't wait for you guys to tune back in tomorrow for Reading While Black.